Moral Revolution community, welcome back to our podcast. I'm so glad you joined us today. We're going to dive into all things God's design for healthy sexuality. Let's talk about it.
Hey, welcome to the Let's Talk About It podcast. We have a guest, Chris yes. Cruz.
Hey.
Christopher or Chris?
Chris works great.
Is Christopher the
Christopher is my official legal name.
Yeah. What's your middle name?
Joseph.
Christopher Joseph Cruz.
That's it. Right, that's there. In the flesh.
In the flesh.
We're getting to just sit down.
It's not a hologram.
No, not Tupac at Coachella. This is real.
That's right. Chris is young adult pastor, creative director. I feel like you do like 15 things at Bethel now.
It doesn't stop. Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
There's lots of rules.
Yeah.
Those are the main two.
So you've been a part of Bethel for how many years?
Oh my gosh, almost 14.
Chris is actually one of our speakers for MR, back when we used to have events.
But
it's been a while.
Yeah, something happened.
They are.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, some pandemic or something.
Something with a 19 at the end of it.
Yeah, we don't say the whole word. But things are coming back. But anyways, really what we want to talk about today, Chris has this unbelievable message that God has given you. But also, you know, I think there's just knowing you, knowing who you are. You know, we have our theology class that we do for those that are licensed at Bethel.
For sure.
Knowing your passion for theology.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, you know, I actually haven't heard this yet. I'm excited to hear this for the first time because so many people have told me about this message that you've done and how, actually, not just like how good it is, but how important it is for right now.
Yeah.
Like, how critical this message is for the season that we're in, the culture, the confusion that's going on as it pertains to sexuality.
You know?
I would say things have been confused for a long time, but now it just feels like it continues to become more and more important.
Because when hostility rises, most of the time the church's response is just kind of like combating.
Right.
And going like, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong.
Get our pitchforks.
Yeah, and they're not ready to articulate actual vision for sexual flourishing.
Yeah.
They're not wanting to figure out how to articulate that. Pastors aren't, that's not the go-to message. They're trying to think, I've got to stop an injustice happening. And so their main, which is true. When stuff is going in the wrong direction, you do have to stand up. But it's like a dog catching a car. Like when you, what are you going to do when you do catch it? Like when you start to have people listening to you to ask for an alternative message than what they've been given. And if you just basically tell them sex is good and God wanted you to have it, but he wanted you to have it after marriage and just with the opposite sex, they're going to go, okay, cool. That's what this whole fight was about. That's what this whole thing was about, making that be the main thing. So I think there's a lot of that doesn't get articulated deeper.
Yeah. It's already a good start.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really today is, I mean, we're going to go into the theology of sex.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's just go there.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm really excited. You know, you're someone that I have a ton of respect for. The intent that you put into your study, the importance that you put on communicating accurately and intentionally.
Yeah.
I know you don't frivolously throw things out there.
No.
I mean, you think probably twice as much as the average
human. Yeah, I don't think I preached this for like, I don't know how many years before I got it down and was like, all right, after reading, because it's, I think most preachers, if they're honest, they have to recognize they're more like DJs than they are singer-songwriters. They're more like DJs in the sense that they're taking and mixing different sounds together, different practices, and going, all right, I'm going to put these together and formulate a message. So this is the remix of multiple kind of places, from therapy to theology books to other books on sex, and going, all right, this is kind of finding the right way to articulate this is a remix. It's a collaboration of all kinds of stuff together in one place. So it's not original to me, and that's why I like being more like a DJ. I'm like, it's not entirely like, oh, Chris Cruz has this thing and he got it. It's out there for everybody. I just more remixed it into a sound that they hadn't heard before.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, okay, so let's go into this. I want to throw a first question out.
Yeah.
The value of sex.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a big thing that's at play right now, and that's a big thing that there's a lot of confusion around. Mm-hmm. You know, is it, what's the value of it when it can be casual, when there can be no strings attached, allegedly, when we can watch it, we can see it. Is it sacred? Is it not sacred? Is there value? What's the Bible say? What's the theological point there on the value?
Well, sex is sacred. So what we need to dialogue with is the idea that sex is sacred, sin destroys, and there's a difference. Most people make sex synonymous with sin, and that's where they're already starting behind. They're already in the negative here about this, and so what we need to do is start with sex is sacred. How did God design sex? See, it's not entirely the same, but similar to saying, like, because you saw somebody abuse money, money is evil. And I go, no, money's not evil. Like, God has created this thing called sex and has said, this is sacred, but when it is detached from the purpose and the way that I've designed it to work, it is not sacred anymore and actually becomes destructive. And sin is what does that.
Yep.
So sin, when it is connected with sex, is destructive. But sex in the way that God designed it to be is sacred. And so, and that is male and female. And the reason why it's male and female is not because we're trying to push up against some kind of political agenda regarding genders.
Right.
Like, male and female is because it tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
And the scriptures say, they are made in my image, male and female. Now, our bodies are not just biological, they are theological. Okay. They're teaching us about God. And if we don't understand that God designed us that way, we won't see the mystery they're trying to speak of.
So
when God goes male and female, I created them, male and female, meaning this, that there is a giving and receiving of love that leads to the creation of life. If we just break down how life gets created on the planet, outside of God's, boom, speak it into existence,
right,
how humans actually come into being through this, through the act of sex and intercourse, right? But the sex in the form of vaginal penetration, where you're actually having this experience that way, if we could define it like that for this moment, I think there's sex is probably a lot broader than that.
Yeah.
But the idea that God said, for example, I have kids, right? You have kids, I have kids. My son, for example, as semen lived in me before he was ever in my wife.
Yep.
So, but he's in me before he's ever formed. But through the act of sex, he is in me, then in her, through the act of loving union, of giving and receiving.
Mm-hmm.
So the Trinity starts to get in play. This is why Paul references the marriage as the insight, a vantage point into the mystery of God.
Wow.
Because there is the giving and receiving of love, an exchange of love, that can only truly show the giving and receiving in the way that creates life at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tells the divine story.
Mm-hmm.
And so when male and female interact in that way and life is given, so my semen goes into my wife, in that experience, life begins to take place in her, and then my son is formed in her.
Yep.
So start thinking about the Trinity here. You're going, oh my goodness, in him before the creation of the world, you're getting shaped in him, and in him you live, move, and have your being, and then through him. And so the idea is now that through my wife, which again elevates the female in our perspective in such an important way, and goes, all right, now the birth of my son through my wife, and then he is sustained by my wife.
Yeah.
Like he's dependent immediately. And if something is wrong, he has to have an apparatus to sustain him. But when it works as it is intended, he is sustained by my wife.
Right.
And then through that, he is taught how to then, in the communion of us now, he learns how to have his being. And so it's the idea that through my wife's giving and receiving, my giving and receiving to her, a life is created. And it's through this commitment to love. Because when the covenant comes into play here is because the idea is in sex, you're basically committing yourself to the other person in such a way for their delight, their pleasure, their enjoyment, and their safety. And what I would end at the end of the day go, the commitment to create the life that God wants to create on the earth. And so when we start thinking about that, but I also just want to drop in there, like Tim Keller says this quote, the Bible can be uncomfortable for the prudish, especially if we read Song of Songs, right? Or Proverbs 5:19, a loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breasts satisfy you always. These are not spiritual breasts. These are not, the spiritual breasts.
It's not a figurative
statement. Yeah. May her breasts satisfy you always. May you ever be intoxicated with her love. May you ever be intoxicated. And what we do is, you're just so in love with your wife. It's connected to breasts. Like, there's an idea that, like, all right, may her breasts satisfy you always.
in that you would be intoxicated with her love. Now, for the Christian, most of the time, sex is so talked about so negatively that when sex is introduced, it's duty.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I now get to have sex. And then the female or the male, whoever, you know, odds are probably one or the other, is this sense of like, I have to do this now because I get to do this, but now I have to do this. And pleasure is nowhere in the Christian arena. Mm. They don't talk about sex being something that is meant to be this intoxicating, pleasurable experience.
Yep.
And that is even for myself, my own, having this theology about sex. I cannot just have this theology about sex. Orthodoxy and orthopraxy. So this is the best of theology to practice, right? It's like, this is the funnest theology to practice. And it could be the most destructive theology to practice.
Yeah.
And so it's figuring out, how do I get healthy in this? Not just in theology, but in practice. If you're in a committed covenant relationship where sex flourishes.
Yeah.
Sex flourishes in that place. So it's in that a great resource for people would be finding the Connection Codes by Dr. Glenn Hill. He's my therapist. He's the one that's transformed my sex life, but transformed my wife, and I meet with him regularly, him and his wife, and they've helped us understand the gift of sex and the pleasure introduced into it and the commitment and love and exchange of identity that happens.
Okay, so let me ask this then. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what you're saying is so powerful, it's really what Moral Revolution's built on.
Yeah.
Right? This mm-hmm. idea that God has a vision and a design for sex.
Yeah.
We know the procreation standpoint.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, what you just presented is foreign to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, for probably both of us, mm-hmm. I imagine, I know for me, my earliest and most frequent narratives around mm-hmm. sex were don't do it, don't look, don't.
Yes.
You know, don't. There's a lot of don'ts in all mm-hmm. the conversations that surrounded it.
Yes.
What would you say is God's vision for sex? Does he mm-hmm. he likes it? He doesn't like it? What's his tone towards it? What's his vision for it?
God loves sex. He loves your desire to explore sex.
I'm glad that he loves that. Yeah. He loves those things.
God loves that because he's sexual union. And here's the thing. Most people think celibacy happens because an individual doesn't have a sex drive.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's not actually true. I think what celibacy is understanding that sex is an icon and marriage is an icon into God, seeing who God is and understanding him. And when we are like the ordained by God to be a man, ordained by God to be a woman, without these, you cannot tell the mystery well. But that mystery that the marriage is speaking of in the now is supposed to be something that speaks of a marriage later on.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
it's our Ephesians. Earthly imagery to better understand.
So those that are in celibacy are actually saying, I see what you're actually pointing to.
Mm.
And I will give up that and try to and lean myself towards that and give myself to that. And so marriage is not a social construct. It's the way in which God has decided to reveal himself.
Yeah, right.
Marriage and sex. And the other thing about it is there's a eros and agape love. There's all kinds of love, but eros and agape are interesting because eros is a different kind of energy and a different kind of force. And so when we think about eros, it's this where we get erotic or anything like that. It can be distorted into selfish pleasure, right? Eros can be this thing that is distorted. Pope Benedict XVI said this, that eros is a force which does not allow the lover to remain in himself, but moves him to become one with the beloved. Eros is that erotic longing to press into something deeper and rediscover at the end of it that longing you have is for God. So I tell people all the time, if you're longing for sex, you're longing for God.
Mm.
Because that erotic desire that you have that is moving you out of yourself to try to become one with somebody is speaking of the infinite longing you have in your heart. I think it's Bruce Springsteen who says that every person has a hungry heart. And you're like, it's that idea that inside of you is a thirst and a hunger. Christopher West's book, Theology of the Body, dives quite into that. Yeah,
it's a hard concept for people, especially those raised in the church.
Because
you just said, the more you want to have sex, that proves the more that you want to have God.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. The more you want to have sex, the deeper you want to be with the Lord, the closer you want to be with him.
You have an internal longing that your sex drive speaks of. You have an eternal longing that God said in the earth, there will be many ways in which you can see me, many vantage points into understanding the mystery that is me.
So how damaging, Chris, to have sex be synonymous with if you want sex, you're bad.
Exactly.
If you want sex, there's something wrong with you. You shouldn't want sex at 14, 15, 16. Yeah. I mean, so much of my being raised years in the church all centered around... Like, I even had somebody pray for me one time. Like, I had strong feelings for Caitlin. He actually prayed that my strong feelings would be removed.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, so I mean, that's an epiphany conversation that you, that's a massive thought.
Because the idea is like the only way for you to manage sex drive is to get rid of sex drive.
Right.
The only way to take what you
But why would I want to get rid of something that you're saying is ultimately what proves that I have a hunger
for God.
For God.
Hey guys, if you're like me, then you learn best through interaction. And if that's the case, then the 40-Day Journey to Purity is for you. This is 40 days of amazing content written on the topics of sexuality, sex, relationships, dating, all of those amazing topics that I know you have questions on. And for each day, there are interactive videos and questions. So it's really in depth. You guys should definitely check it out at morerevolution.com and get yours today.
So that eternal longing in every heart, the soul thirsts for God.
Right.
The Psalms say, the soul thirsts for God. If you do not give the soul God, you will find a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and we see this all throughout scripture when creatures lose sight of their worship of the creator, they worship creation instead of the creator.
Right.
And here's the thing about sex. Most people think culture is overdoing it. And I'm going, it's actually underselling it. It's underselling sex. It's underselling the beauty that is meant to be so wild, so erotic, so wholesome and respectful that, like, me and my wife were joking about this in the sense that when my son eventually gets to the conversation about sex, and if he ever gets exposed to pornography or if something happens with pornography and he asks about it, I said, one of the jokes are going to be is porn's got nothing on us.
Totally.
Like, it has nothing on us, not just... And here's what I used to hear when Christians would say stuff like that, is porn has nothing on us because we're married. But our actual sex life, what we actually do, is painful
for us. And
what
we communicate.
We don't have fun with it. You're like, one of us wants this and the other one doesn't want it at all.
Exactly.
It's so dutiful.
Chris.
And so we're just giving this like veneer to the idea. What I'm actually saying is if you can lean into figuring out sex and this eternal drive that also gets worked out in a covenant relationship where you are giving of yourself, where that eros is married to agape, the willingness to lay your life down. This is why the Song of Songs ends with love as strong as the grave is what holds sex well, basically. A love that, and what that phrase, love as strong as the grave, is because the ancients would say the thing that no one can run away from is death.
Yeah.
Everybody's gonna die.
Yeah.
And so a love that is strong as the force that will touch everyone. And so the idea that love that is willing and is unstoppable and giving of yourself will hold eros correctly. And that outgoing, ecstatic nature of the Trinity, that self-giving, that outgoing nature of God, that dance between the Father, Son, and Spirit, that union that is happening there, God goes, yeah, this is uncomfortable for you. And the Bible, as Tim Keller says, is uncomfortable for the prudish. This is uncomfortable for you to think about. But that speaks of me somehow. And that is not just saying, I need to go, okay, I need to put, as my therapist says, tab A into slot B and go like that. It's going, how do I actually not only just have this theology, because I'm not even like, it's taking the worship of sex and putting it as sex as worship. Going like, I'm not going to worship sex. What I'm actually going to do is worship God with sex. And that happens when we go into the
really
the way
thought.
God has designed it to be. And the way that he designed it to be is not because we're going, oh, we have a social construct called marriage that you need to be in. He designed it in the commitment of your love would die for the other person.
Yep.
And that if you have that love in there, that erotic longing will be so satisfied and safe. So when we have this desire even towards God, it's only safe because we see Christ gives himself. When you see Christ gives himself and dies for you and sacrifices himself, it's a love that's trusted because you are worth dying for.
Yeah. So good.
So in sex, this erotic longing is then captured well when it goes, my spouse says they will die for me.
Hmm.
And so I think we need to change how we view a lot of that stuff and change how we actually have sex. Because I think you get that theology piece in, and then you actually have to start exploring, actually exploring when you're in the beauty of marriage, the place that I say marriage, this is what I tend to say. Marriage is God created, and it is not a social construct. We're going to a wedding. Mm-hmm. We are the bridegroom going to a wedding, and the female body tells a story of receiving, the male body tells a story of giving. And in this marriage, the commitment of becoming one flesh,
yep,
that I will leave all that I am and all that I have to become one with you. And one is that it is like inseparable, and it would be, yep, like just so destructive to take apart. The idea that I would lose myself in you, how do you not see God in that?
Yeah.
How do you not see the so invitation true. To go, I'm going to leave everything, yep, and go become one with you? That context makes for wild, vibrant, wholesome, erotic, respectful sex.
So good.
People don't know how to do that, so they need coaches. They need people who can help them because there's pain involved, there's hurt, mm-hmm, involved. All the sadness that is connected to people's sexual history, yeah, and sexual past, all has to get addressed. Mm-hmm. That you don't just quickly just go, okay, cool, we've got this theology. In. It all starts to come into play. But the thing is this. If, for example, my wife and I, if she goes, we start talking about, hey, this would be super fun. I get a lot of joy thinking about having sex in this position. And we're having this dialogue. And she goes, whoa, I'm flooded with shame.
Hmm.
And that, well, most people would just run away and go, yeah, okay, oh, no, no, get out of here. We need to run, jump ship, evacuate.
Yeah.
Like, get out. We can't have shame and sex. They can't.
Eject.
Yeah, get out of here. I'm not going to ejaculate. I'm going to eject. I'm out. I'm running out of here. And so, but I think what that is an opportunity to handle the vulnerability of her,
mm-hmm,
and heal and be a part of the healing process. Not that you actually do that thing.
Yeah.
But that you hear that and you go, oh yeah, I get that. I hear how that brings shame.
Really good.
And so otherwise you can't have authentic conversation around the exploration of your sex life because you're so afraid of shame. And you're so afraid of pain, fear, and hurt. And so then to have honest conversations about, hey, I don't know what level rating we have on the podcast to say words, but like
you can say whatever you want. Okay, Chris Valadin started this ministry.
Okay, great. When you're like when you're sitting there going and thinking, oh my goodness, I as a husband, I'm going, man, the thought of oral sex and a blowjob is what or what? Oh my goodness, can we have a conversation about that? It's like, no, well, most people are like, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
They have no idea what to do with that because they're so afraid of the shame.
Hmm.
And so what they say is, I shouldn't have shame. I shouldn't have shame. I shouldn't have shame. And I'm like, but you do. You do. So what do you do with that? And you have to go, if sex is meant to be the safest place and marriage is meant to be the safest place to process this, there must be a love on the other side of me talking to me that says, I'll die for you, never take advantage of you. That can hear all your fears, your concerns, your hurt, and your shame about sex and exploring sex together. If you're just hoping that you come home as a husband, you come home and you go, I bought us a sex date game. I'm like, I got us a game. And she's flooded with fear and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, you know what? This is because you've got an issue. I'm like, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. You have not become the Christ that gives identity.
Yeah.
You have not become the Christ that holds her and says, oh, wow, I will give myself for you, and I am patient.
So good.
Love is patient. So it's going, all right, this is what holds sex together.
I love it. You know what? Everybody was right.
We're just a conversation.
It's so powerful.
Yeah.
But it is. It's so powerful. Even honestly, I think just the thought that we could say, I think even just your title, Chris, of the theology of sex.
Yeah.
Just the title alone, mm-hmm, draws it back into perspective of I'm now, when you said theology of sex, I'm now seeing that through a filter of the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm, biblical truth, God's design. Wait a sec, that's right, God did design this.
Yes.
Not that I forgot, but I think a lot of people forget that.
Or right? It gets tied up in agendas.
This is created by God. Mm-hmm. This is blessed by God. This mm-hmm. is anointed by God. And the depth of what you said, it blew my mind, honestly. Mm-hmm. Even when you said biological and theological, you're right. Mm-hmm. My relationship with my wife points to God.
Absolutely. Paul says it in Ephesians.
Yeah.
He says this speaks of the mystery of God somehow. He says this, and husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. And,
yep.
and the thing I'm speaking about is the mystery of God. And you're like, and he even claims, I don't really know how this even works, this mystical
thing.
But
yet it's this unbelievable billboard yep. for the relationship the Lord yes. desires to have with us.
Yeah, and that's why male and female, ordained to be man, ordained to be woman, tells the divine story, because in that, the divine story leads to life and flourishing. So it's not just like, oh, I can have a baby.
Yeah.
No. The idea that the earth creates life through a story in which God designed mm-hmm. is absolutely insane.
It is.
And so the it's idea so that good. This giving and receiving of love in that way that leads to out of, God didn't create the world. Let's just say this for everybody. God did not create the world because he needed the world.
Yeah, right.
If he did, he wouldn't be God. Because mm-hmm. if he has a need, then in that way, that to be himself, mm-hmm. then he cannot be God. He has to self-exist. So he creates this out of want.
Mm, yeah.
I am daring to say, I know that children come into the earth all kinds of ways. I have family members in different situations. Children come into the earth in all kinds of ways. I think God's desire is to mimic the Trinity. And that children come out of the overflow of love that says, I don't need a child. I want a child. And that comes out of our level of overflowing love. So much so that when we overflow in our love, the natural result is that a child is born.
Wow.
That the natural overflow of God's love in the Trinity, God loving the Son in the yeah. Trinity, so much so goes, we're going to create creation. It's like, what was God, the joke is, what was God doing before he created the world? Loving the Father, Son, and Spirit. Mm-hmm. That's what he was doing before he created the world. He just added creation into to join in the dance.
So good.
I'm glad, man.
So good. Thanks for joining us. Any concluding thoughts? Anything you feel like, hey, people need to leave with this thought? Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, I feel like you've given so much. They probably need to watch us 15 more times.
And get the tools. Like, learn tools. The Connection Codes, Dr. Glenn Hill, Christopher West's book, The Theology of the Body. You're going to read stuff and go, oh, Chris didn't say that. This guy said that. Or this Pope said that. Sometimes I can even forget where the quotes come from. But read those books. Tim Keller's book on sex. There's another book called Divine Sex. I don't agree with everything in them.
Yeah, right.
But it's there moments where I go, okay, that's truth. I like that.
Good. Yeah. It's awesome. Well, thanks for joining us on the Let's Talk About It podcast. Sure, we made some of you feel uncomfortable. We hope we did. If we did, we did our job. And hopefully the uncomfortability will lead to great comfort
honesty.
And peace and honesty and clarity.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys for listening. If you want to learn more and check out all of our awesome content, be sure to head to our website at moralrevolution.com. and our socials, Instagram, Facebook, all of them. But before you leave, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, all of the things. We want you guys to come back and join us. We enjoyed having you. See you next time.